listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
We have blessed are the peacemakers. What does that mean? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
Well, I think in the progressive sense of reading the Beatitudes, we come to a place where we have peace with God, where everything is in order. That word peace, the word Hebrew word shalom, it means when everything is level and in God's order, okay, when it's level, then we want to bring this peace to the people around us. We very naturally want to tell people. It's like us, Red. It's like me. I wasn't a coffee drinker before I went to Honduras back in 1984 and started working with refugees, and I found myself living in this refugee community with one other person that spoke English, and I was living with Myrna and Truman Cunningham, and Myrna was fixing me rice and beans and boiled bananas sometimes 3 days a week, but she had coffee on the table, and I wasn't a coffee drinker, and one day I realized this is my fourth flavor option. So I started drinking it, and that prompted me the next time I went to Tegucigalpa. I went into a store and I saw this export quality coffee, and it was a whole different animal. And that started my coffee journey. And eventually we started buying coffee and selling it to make money to pay our teachers and our school project. But the coffee that we're drinking, that we do, we roast at the Rio Coco Cafe Roastery, is a completely different animal than what most people are drinking. And I get excited about encouraging people to drink good coffee because it's very healthy. It has more antioxidants than anything else you can put in your body.
And no, if
you drink 2 cups of coffee or more a day, you're going to have a lower chance of liver or pancreatic cancer. There's no. These are all documented university medical studies. No link to hypertension. And recently, Rhett, there's two studies that came out a couple months ago, independent of each other. If you drink 2 cups of coffee before noontime, your chances of dying that day are 70% less than if you don't. 70%, golly. Okay.
We're only going to sell a lot of this coffee now.
No, but that's such a funny statistic. And whenever I'm talking to someone that's our age, they go, "Where do I sign up for your coffee club?" So we very naturally want to pass on the good things that we have learned in life to the people around us. And this is what happens as we go through this process of becoming a disciple of Jesus. He has everything that we need and desire. And what's coming up next for us after this life is huge. So Jesus goes from this.
It's huge.
Jesus goes from this to the next aspect of how we are to interact with the people around us. And he says, you're the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Salt in biblical culture has a relational meaning because God makes salt covenants with the Levites, with David. These are covenants that last forever. He says in Leviticus 2, put salt on the offerings as a sign of our relationship. It lasts forever. Jesus says, let there be salt among you and have peace with one another. Let your speech be seasoned with salt so that you'll know how to respond properly, says Paul to his friends in Colossae. So there's this relational issue. And in biblical culture, salt means loyal and faithful friends. And if you're talking to a Middle Easterner and your friends, you could say there's salt between us and they would understand there's friendship. So I think what Jesus is calling us to be as salt of the world is loyal, unoffendable, faithful friends. Now, Rhett, imagine if the body of Christ here in Indian River County, if every person that attended church was known as a loyal and faithful friend in our community, would that change things?
And unoffendable.
Okay. I'm not going to let you get on my show again. Okay. Or my wife, who's a very peaceful person, flies off the handle with offense and has to catch herself and, you know, be the gentle person in her spirit. But it's so funny how we often react and we catch ourselves. At least I'm starting to catch myself, and I think we all are catching ourselves. But God is calling us to be unoffendable, loyal, faithful friends, and light is defined as random acts of kindness and service to the people around us. So imagine if we were friendly people that were listeners more than we were talkers, that we weren't judgmental, that we were sympathetic, empathetic, and compassionate, and that we took opportunity to serve the needs of the people around us. Would that change our world? Well, Rodney Stark, in his book, The Rise of Christianity, documents the growth of Christianity from the first century in the Roman Empire. Rodney says there's about 10,000 Christians at the end of the first century in a very remote corner of the empire. But by the middle of the fourth century, there's 33 million of us, compromising 53% of the population. How did it happen?
Yeah.
Well, he documents caring for widows, caring for orphans, treating women with dignity, taking in strangers, being generous. Then the two plagues, the first one in 160, the second in 250. Caring for the people that sometimes 30% of the population died in these plagues, but the Christians cared for them. And as a result of that, we grew in numbers. And the way we faced death in the arenas when we were forced to give homage to the gods and we said, nope, we're not doing that. And people going, who are these guys? Yeah. And so imagine if we were salt and light to our community. And I want to encourage all of you who are considered, you consider yourself to be followers of Jesus, be known as loyal, faithful, unoffendable friends. Pause in traffic when someone cuts you off, realizing maybe he's in a little more of a hurry than you are.
Don't kick them off your radio show because they say something that offends you.
That's something that happened last week, folks. We had a very polite discussion going on, and things took a turn, and comments were made, and we're laughing about it now at the reactions that we had. But imagine if we were loyal and faithful friends. Then the next thing.
That's with David. That's with David, former diplomat. But, he was on with me for 8 years, and he tends to raise his voice. I noticed last week I purposely kept very gentle, and you were perfect for me with him because he never got a rise out of you. You're very, and so he calmed right down. But at one point he said something, and I said, you know, I'm not going to let you on my show anymore if you're going to talk that way.
And I was ringing the bell. Okay. So, yes, we're just normal guys. We have our issues, folks. We're not anybody special. We're just like you. So the next thing Jesus addresses is how we are to read the scriptures. He says, don't think I came to abolish the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill them. And I say, anyone who says we should not teach these is going to be the least in the kingdom, but one who teaches and obeys these will be called the greatest in the kingdom. And I say that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, you won't enter the kingdom of heaven.
Well, hold on now. What he means by that.
Let me tell you what the word is. The key word here is pleroo. I did not come to abolish the scriptures, the law and the prophets, but to pleroo. It's a Greek word that can mean complete. It can mean fulfill, but all of my dictionaries say in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, it means explain them more fully.
But he says that unless your righteousness is greater than, you know, because that means when you learn that the only righteousness that will get you into heaven is the one that he paid for, the free gift, unlike other
self-earned righteousness.
Self-earned. In other religions, they say you must die for this guy or die for this guy. Where Jesus says, no. I died for you. All you have to do is accept it. But that way, I can't boast against Mike Bagby and say, well, he helped more old ladies across the street than me, so he's better than me, or vice versa. It's that our only righteousness comes from the Lord, and that way we're all even at the foot of the cross, everybody. And it's a great way to start off. In other words, actually, in God's eyes, even though you're a dad, a husband, you have four children, you've been a missionary for over 40 years, you would think a guy like you probably has a whole lot more gold stars than Rhett Palmer. But But God's capable of loving me just as much as he is loving you, even though you've acquired and done all these things.
But this is not a contest to see who can have any more gold stars. It's a daily walk. So
we hope so.
So Jesus is explaining that we should look at the Hebrew Scriptures as something that's going to teach us. And in normal theological studies and exegesis techniques, there's three ways to look at the Hebrew Scriptures. One is called the theonomic way, which means let's try and obey the laws as best we can. And I have a lot of Jewish messianic Christians that are trying to, because they're Jews, those laws that say, do these for all your generations, they're trying to do that, and I respect that. The second approach is the cultural approach, which says these things are old and out of date, they're of their time, we can move on. And that seems to be the approach that many of these progressive churches are taking today. I heard a lady pastor a couple days ago quote Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13, about these things are old and obsolete and have now passed away. She said, my Jesus tells me that I don't have to obey or even think about these Old Testament laws because they're old or out of date. And of course, she's missing the entire context of the book of Hebrews, which is written to Hebrews who are followers of Jesus, who are still going up to the temple and offering sacrifices for their sins. And the writer says, you don't need to do that anymore. And probably within 20 years of that book being written, Titus came with the 13 legion and destroyed the temple, so there hasn't been a sacrifice since. The final way to understand the Hebrew Scriptures is the principle approach, and this says behind every cultural practice, there's an everlasting truth and principle that works for you and me and all of us followers of Jesus in our world today. One example of this is Leviticus chapter 1. Verse 1 says, God called out to Moses at the tabernacle. He said, tell the people of Israel to bring me an offering. And verse 3, let the offering be a male without defect. Now, that's kind of an obscure verses that none of us would really maybe read and meditate on. But from those three verses, I get three principles that help my life. Number one, God called out to Moses. I know from that God will sometimes take the initiative to talk to me. And when I'm feeling separate, lonely, and depressed, I am encouraged that when God wants to speak to me, he will speak to me. Verse 2 says, bring me an offering. And that's a big part of God's economy, that we're to bring something back as an acknowledgement of he's the giver of all the things that we have. And the third principle is we're to bring him our very best. We're not to just bring him something, we're to bring our best.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for New Day with Rhett Palmer.
We'd like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting. It's a new day.
Surely we will never cease to pray.